Copyright 2022 Sam Vander Whalen LLC. All rights reserved. Any use of this intellectual property owned by Sam Vander Whalen LLC may not be used in connection with the sale or distribution of any content, free or paid, written or verbal, product, and or service by you without prior written consent from Sam Vander Whalen LLC.
Hey there, and welcome to this how-to video tutorial for your retreat contract template. So I have to be honest, I thought about coming to this how-to video tutorial in like maybe my bathing suit, maybe like a fun drink with an umbrella thing, but I decided I'd keep it professional around here. And also it's still a little too cold out here on the East Coast to be wearing a bikini anytime soon. So with that, let's get started in learning how to fill out your retreat contract template. So I am so excited for you to have this template, not only because I really believe it's super comprehensive from a legal perspective, but also because I'm in your line of work. I understand what goes into retreats and what's like offered and included, and some of the things you might not have thought of that you might have a few aha moments as you're filling out this retreat contract template today. So with that, just some ground rules, as always, with any of my legal templates. I want to remind you to watch this tutorial, obviously, in its entirety. I also included a PDF like guidelines download that you can grab where it has some more tips and guidelines about how to best use these templates. I also try to address all types of learning styles. So if you're more like me and you like to have stuff sitting in front of you, that might be helpful to you too. And then like all of my templates, I always encourage you to watch this video along with me, pretend like I'm sitting next to you, having coffee, hopefully. And we'll go through this and fill this out together. If you need to watch it more than once, of course, feel free to do that. And then what I want you to do at the end, after you've gone through and filled it all out, filled in all of these little fill in the blanks, I want you to go back and read this contract in its entirety. I know that doesn't sound super fun, but what a lot of people don't know about contracts or website policies in general is that there's not always a like just one right answer. In life in general, there's usually not one right answer. But for so many things, when it comes to legal, it's actually most important that it's true as to you and your business. So with that, it is most important that, you know, I might have chosen kind of a default policy, and I'll try to point those out as I go along. And it's not necessarily the way you have to do it. And it's especially important that if you're not doing it that way, that you actually just change up the language. And as always, and I'll mention it again at the end, but as always, you can always reach out to me with any questions. If you're like, what the heck are you talking about? You can always email me, or of course, you can post a post inside of our private client-only Facebook community. So with that, let's get started. I have to tell you, I was doing some daydreaming while I was drafting this contract for you because I was thinking about all the fun places that you guys are going to take people, how much amazing work's going to happen there, how much amazing connection, and all of that. So with that, let's fill this baby out. So right here at the top, we just label it retreat contract. And I wanted to give you the option of putting, if you have like a cool name of your retreat, you can go ahead and put that here. You could put your logo, any branding that you want. You could put your logo or branding above where it says retreat contract as well. I also put waiver and release of liability here because it's a better legal description of kind of the meat and potatoes of what people are really doing in a retreat contract. They're really waiving the right to sue you. You're trying to get them to waive the right to sue you. And they're releasing liability for anything that happens either from and to the retreat. You'll see me talk a lot about travel in this contract template. And then also like at the retreat, or if somebody at the retreat, like one of the other attendees does something. So you're really releasing yourself, or you're getting them to release you from legal liability here. So right up front, this is, again, this is one of those areas where this is really up to you and you can play with this. This part especially that you'll see me highlight here is not like legalese. So feel free to play with it if you don't like the names that I've chosen or something like that, or the titles. But really what the purpose of this little upfront section here, this is where everyone's eyes are going to go first when they open up your contract template. And this is the real important stuff in terms of like what's included here, like what's the deal, right? So how many days, how many nights, where is it, what days are they, what's included, how much am I paying you? I think that's where my eyes would go. So I like to just include this right here up front. I think it's pretty self-explanatory here. The only one that I wanted to talk with you a little bit more about was accommodations. if you're not including any accommodations with your retreat, so if people have to get their own hotel or own Airbnb or whatever, then instead of saying accommodations included here, I include an alternative sentence for you here. It just says accommodations, colon, accommodations are the responsibility of the attendee. Obviously, if you are including accommodations, you'll go ahead and delete this part and just describe the accommodations that are provided right here. Okay, so moving on to this first paragraph, it's kind of the typical first opening paragraph of a contract that describes who the contract is by and between, as we would say. So here we want to go through, and again, you're going to put the name of the retreat, and then you'll see that now, from now on in this entire contract, anytime that you see me refer to the retreat, I put the retreat, capital R, because in legal language, when you see something that's like a normal word, but that's capitalized, it means generally means that it should have been defined earlier in the document. So that's why instead of having to keep describing which retreat we're talking about, here we drop the name of the retreat in this bracket here, and then from now on, I'll refer to it as the retreat, and you'll see that kind of same pattern here in this paragraph. You want to go ahead and put your business name here, and again, this is the legal business entity name that you have, like Delicious Cupcakes LLC. You want to put that, whatever your legal company name is, if you have a DBA, a doing business as, otherwise known as a fictitious name or an alternative name, you would put Delicious Cupcakes LLC, DBA, Delicious Cupcakes and Stuff, whatever your DBA is. I'm just trying to come up with one on the fly. So whatever your DBA is, you would put that legal entity name, DBA, and then the actual doing business as name. And then moving on here, you have to just quickly put in what type of business entity you have, and you want to spell it out. So for example, if you're an LLC, don't put LLC, put limited liability company. And please remember that LLC stands for limited liability company, not limited liability corporation. That's a mistake that I see very often. Or if you have a partnership or a corporation or whatever you do have, you just want to put whatever type of entity you have here, spell it out. And you'll see this paragraph will get a lot shorter since you're deleting all of this language here. Okay, so the next one is to just put the state here where your business is registered. So for example, this might read releases Sam Vander Wielen LLC, a limited liability company organized and existing under the laws of the state of California, wherever it is. So you'll put that there. Okay, now here's the first time you're going to drop in your attendee name. So hopefully you're using some sort of program that sends people contracts to e-sign, or like a client relationship manager, something like that, some CRM program where you can like send and sign contracts and invoices and all that fun stuff. Because with a lot of them, they will give you the ability to kind of like autofill some of this information so that every time you're not having to go in and put in somebody's name and the date and all that stuff. So that's always an option to you, just so that you know. I always recommend that kind of stuff. I use Dubsado. People use HelloSign, Adobe Sign, all that stuff. So if possible, just auto drop that in here. If not, then go ahead and type it, or have whoever helps you do that, type the attendee's name here. So you'll see that throughout this retreat contract template, I'm referring to the person who's attending your retreat as the attendee, because we're really talking about an event, some sort of experience, right? Some kind of like intimate gathering. And so we want to refer to them as an attendee as opposed to a client in this regard, because maybe you do other kinds of work in your business where you work privately or in a group or something like that. These people, I wouldn't necessarily qualify as your clients. It would be more like the attendees of your event. And I especially want to kind of delineate that for you so that this event is being run by your business and not by you personally. So they're an attendee of your business's event, if that makes sense. Okay, so that's the last thing you have to fill in at the top. Jumping right into the meat of this agreement. I always laugh when I use, like, I always say meat and potatoes. I'm a vegetarian. So anywho, when you jump into retreat description here, I broke this into two parts, what it includes and what it does not include. The does not include part, this part here that I've highlighted for you, that's totally optional. I just thought that would be really helpful. This is, again, not like a legal thing, but I just thought it would be helpful, especially if there was something specific that you are not including. I think it would be important to draw that out. So I know that a lot of retreats I've attended, while they'll include like the education and the attendance at the retreat, they won't include things like airfare, or some might not include lodging. So you want to just spell that out, I think. If not, if you don't feel like doing that, or if everything's included, you could delete it. And same goes here for this. The first part is about what it does include. So I would just get really specific. Remember that in legal stuff, it's all about attention to detail. So you want to spell out the number of days or nights, the food and drink. It say that like only two meals a day are included. What meals? You know, is there some value? Is alcohol included? Other drinks? I don't know. Is coffee included? If not, I'm not coming. You know, that kind of stuff. So you want to talk about just getting really specific about exactly what's included here, and if there's anything related to like materials or access to portals or printables or whatever, you just want to spell all of that out. Okay, number two, the part that you're probably most excited to talk about is the payment section. So the payment section for the retreat is just where I want you to get really clear for exactly how much this costs, and then how they have to pay you. So like it's $5,000 and they have to pay by PayPal or whatever. Again, there's no right or wrong. It's just about letting people know how they can pay you, or maybe you send them an invoice. So saying like, you must sign this agreement and pay the invoice in order to secure your spot, something like that. Maybe you would even insert a date here by which they have to pay the invoice or make payment in order to hold their spot, because that might be a good way to avoid people like signing your contract, but not making the payment, waiting, and then coming back saying to you later, like, hey, I thought I had a spot at that retreat, but you had to move on. So including a date there might be helpful. I included this optional little section here that I've highlighted for you if you're going to offer people a payment plan. So I know a lot of my clients, especially when they're offering retreats that are, you know, well off in the distance, they're giving people the ability to pay for it over time. So all that matters really here is that you create some sort of little breakdown where it would say like payment one, $300 due by and before. And then I just put in some sample dates here. And then what's really key here when you include any sort of payment schedule is not only having like however many payments and when they're due and how much, but also including language like this at the end for a total payment of $5,000 or whatever, right? So that's especially important because if you're allowing for a payment plan, you might be adding on a little bit extra for giving them the ability to pay over time. So you want them to know what the total is, not just that these individual payments are. In our industry too, there have been problems with people thinking installment payments are like optional, like they can just make a couple and stop. So it's really important to remember or to remind them that it's just a payment plan. It's exactly what it sounds like. And they are ultimately responsible for the ultimate payment of whatever it tallies up to. So that is the payment section. Okay, waiver and release section. Section number three is pretty straightforward, but this is the one I was talking about in the beginning. That's kind of the most legally important in the sense that you're telling them that they have to release and forgive you in the legal sense, not in the like human to human sense, but that they have to forgive you for anything that happens, any liabilities, any damages, any costs, any charges, anything that ends up basically happening that's bad from the retreat. That's the best way I can put it. It's just saying too that you're not responsible. I especially added in language here about traveling to and from the retreat. That's something that I don't see being properly covered in other contracts that I've seen about retreats, because people might try to say something like if something happens on their way, you don't want to be responsible for like if American Airlines cancels their flight and they can't get there, you can't offer them a refund because you held their spot, stuff like that. So that's really what you're waiving. They are waiving, sorry, the attendee is waiving and releasing their right to sue you for certain things or to come after you for certain damages in this section three. Section four is all about assumption of the risk. So with assumption of the risk, what we're basically saying is to this attendee, like by attending this retreat or by signing up for this and paying for this, you're saying that you understand all the things that inherently come along with travel and attending a retreat or like swimming in the pool that you might have at the retreat or whatever, right? So they're basically, you're basically trying to shift ownership of responsibility by saying to the person that they are in sound mind and body and signing this agreement, knowing full well what all of the risks are that are included. Really, the only like optional part here that I included was the part that I've just highlighted for you, which is to include if the retreat is overseas, because there are additional risks that come from maybe hosting a retreat overseas, not only because people are traveling perhaps a bit further. And I wanted to remind you too that this would also include like if you have people traveling to your retreat overseas, like from another country, not necessarily whether you're hosting it in a country that other than your own, but if people are even traveling to other countries, I think it's important because not only are there inherent risks in the travel, but there's also things like medical services, like you might be in a more remote location or not speak the same language or something like that. There are also instances of like unsteady political unrest, things like that. So that part is covered in that little sentence right there. And you'll see, we'll get to that again later on. Okay. Moving on to indemnification, defense, and hold harmless. Essentially, what an indemnification clause is, my best way of describing it, not in fancy legal language, is essentially like if there was a third party lawsuit, right? So if this attendee sued the resort that you went to, and then there was like, because they slipped and fell by the pool, and then the resort tried to bring you as the company and as an individual into this lawsuit, what an indemnification clause does is it's basically telling this attendee, you can't loop me into those lawsuits. So if you get into a dispute with a third party, like another attendee or the owner of the resort premises or the home that you go to or whatever, you can't loop me in. And not only can you not loop me in, you actually have to protect me in that lawsuit. So this paragraph is important because what it would do is actually shift responsibility for protecting you over to the attendee's lawyer or insurance company if they have insurance. So I know it's a bunch of crazy legal language, but that is essentially what it's for. It's also, again, reminding them that they have to hold you harmless. They have to defend you. It's all a bunch of fancy way of saying if there's all this like third party or there's a claim against even the attendee directly, right? So maybe the resort owner sues the attendee for some reason, something weird happens, or one of the other attendees gets into a legal fight with them. They have to kind of shield you and like protect you from it. That's my best way of describing it. So, okay, moving on to disclaimers. So this one looks really long, but it is not going to be long once we go through this. It's going to make the whole contract, by the way, will be much shorter since you're deleting things that are optional and filling things in. So what I did here was that I just want to tell the attendee kind of upfront, like who you are and what you do. So if you're running this retreat because you're a yoga instructor or you're a business coach or a consultant and a mentor, whatever it is, I would just quick describe it right here so that you're being really clear. You're not purporting to be a doctor, a lawyer, a therapist, whatever. So I would just describe it really quickly up here. And then what I want you to do is you're either going to choose one or the other. So you're not including all of these paragraphs. You're either using this one that I've just highlighted here, if it's more of a retreat around business, life, self-development, or you're using this paragraph here. It's one or the other. So you're choosing one or the other and deleting the one that you're not using because it doesn't apply to you. So this second one here that I have highlighted is more for you if you're offering a retreat centered around wellness and fitness. This one's especially important if at this retreat you're going to talk about food, or you might even be working out, you know, even if it's doing yoga and stretching and meditation, I would still include some things like this. A lot of my clients actually choose to include both because I have a lot of, as we all know, none of these things are completely like distinct from one another. So even if you're talking about business, we all end up talking about our health, our mental well-being, our self-care regimen. So you're perfectly fine to leave it in. I just wanted to let you know, like, if you're absolutely not talking about one or the other of these things, you can delete. So you're going to go ahead and choose which one works for you based on the type of retreat that you're offering. Moving on to cancellation and refund policy. So remember how in the beginning I was talking about how important it is for you to look over things to make sure it kind of like fits with the policy that you want to adopt? That is especially important here because with cancellations and refunds, there's not one right legal way to offer a refund. The point is that it has to be made available to people at or before the time that they purchased. It has to be clear, right? And it can't be like hidden. It should be in clear language, all that kind of stuff. But otherwise, you really can set the tone here. So I came up with kind of a default policy, trying to think of where you want to head. But if I'm wrong and there's some other way that you want to put this, we'll talk about that in a second. So basically in this first paragraph here, I'm giving you the ability to cancel for any reasons, because we just don't know if something could happen. We don't want you to be on the hook. Let's say 3 months out from this retreat, something terrible happens at the location where you were supposed to hold the retreat, or the location for lodging falls through or something like that. We don't want you to be on the hook and for people to be upset at you. So you are able to cancel this retreat at any time for any reason. Of course, you'd have to give them their money back for anything that they, any services that weren't rendered already. So you are saying that here that they are entitled to a refund for any payment that was made if you end up canceling the retreat before the retreat goes on. However, you're not responsible for any additional fees that they can't get back from, like, the airline, a travel company, or any other fees that they put out that weren't paid to you. Now, here's where it comes down to a choice. If you want a, like, 100% no refund, no cancellation policy on behalf of the attendee, then I just included the sentence here for you that says, once the attendee secures his or her retreat spot by signing this contract and completing the payment, no refunds will be issued for any reason, and it doesn't allow them to cancel either. On the other hand, if you want to have some sort of, like, what I call graduated refund requests, so maybe there are refunds allowed up to 6 months before the retreat, or 90 days, or whatever it is. Again, there's no right or wrong. It's really just about what you're comfortable with and then what you want to enforce. So you could just spell that out here. So refund requests will be accepted in writing by email. Again, I put email as a default because I figured most of you would probably want to receive an email, not a snail mail letter, to this email address. I would even put, like, a name and email address, like sam@samvanderwielen.com, or whatever the person's name is that you want them to get in touch with. I'd be really specific. And then here's where you would spell out, like, up to 90 days or up to 6 months prior to the retreat or whatever it is. After, and then I would put, like, the date. So, like, after April 1st of 2019, absolutely no refunds will be issued. So I'd kind of set that deadline so that they're not having to guesstimate in their head what day that is. Again, no right or wrong. No right or wrong is the number of days that you choose. It's just about spelling it out here and making it clear. One thing that I will talk about in a few minutes is, like, what if something happens, right? What if somebody comes to you and says that they had some sort of emergency or family situation that doesn't allow them to travel, and now they want their money back? Of course, first and foremost, you're the CEO of your business, right? So you're in the driver's seat. So you can always make those decisions just because you choose to. And that's completely fine, right? You can make kind of like a change of heart decision. But you could also try to fill their spot if you wanted to, or you can tell that person that they could fill their own spot. I address that later on when it comes to assignment, because what you don't want to happen is you don't want people to be able to buy a spot to your retreat and then resell it to somebody at a higher rate and keep the difference, of course. We would hope people wouldn't do that, but we just don't want to allow that possibility. But you also don't want a case where they're just, like, letting anybody and everybody into your retreat. Like, you probably want to have some sort of say over who's coming. So I'll address that later on as to, like, how you would address that if somebody said, look, I can't make it, I know it's close to the retreat or whatever. There would be some language in here that would kind of cover that situation. So I'll get to that. Next up is an arbitration clause. So arbitration clause, by the way, is intentionally underlined. So you want to leave that and make sure that it's bold if you go ahead and change any of this font. Not all of the headings have to be bold, although I would make them bold. But the arbitration one should be bold and underlined. Some states actually require that. So basically, arbitration is like an alternative form of dispute resolution. So instead of going to court and suing somebody, you actually force them to go to what's called arbitration, which is like more like a meeting that's held between a neutral third party called an arbitrator. They're not usually a lawyer or a judge. They're not always a lawyer or a judge. So it's a lot cheaper. It's super fast. but they don't always get the greatest results. On the flip side, though, you're not waiting years in litigation, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers and like throwing caution to the wind. So it's an opportunity for you to say to someone, before you're able to sue me in court for tons of money, and that's going to take tons of time, you have to file an arbitration claim first with this American Arbitration Association, which is just like a generic arbitration association in America. And really all you have to do here is obviously read through it and then put in your state, because it's going to be held in your state's state court system. That's where you would want it to be. Okay. Oh, and the only thing I want to mention too about the arbitration is that the sole remedy, like what you're saying here in this last sentence is like to your attendee or to a client, if it was in a contract, another sort of contract, that at the end of the day, even if this person is successful against you in arbitration or God forbid in a lawsuit, the only thing that they could ever get from you is just a refund of the money. So maybe you go back and forth and you're arguing, but at the end of the day, that's all that they would be able to get. No, what you don't want is to be able to allow them to get extra damages, special, like consequential punitive damages. You just want them to get the actual damages, which is the amount that they paid. That's it. All right. So what the severability clause here says in section number 9 is just that if a court or a judge or another attorney ever found that any part of this contract was invalid or unenforceable for any reason, whether it's because it doesn't comply with some state's law or it just wasn't okay or whatever, what it means is that just that sentence alone is tossed in the trash, but not the rest of the agreement. That's really important, because without this, you could have an entire contract be thrown away just for a bad sentence or a bad paragraph or a bad heading, right? We don't want that, obviously. So all it would kind of like contain the damage to whatever that problem area was and keep the rest of the contract intact. So that's a very important section. Waiver is an important section where it's just saying that if you, the company or the owner of that company, does something that's kind of, let's say it's kind, right? It's outside of what the terms were, like you let somebody pay a little late, right? Or you let them split up their payment a little bit extra 1 month because they needed some time or something like that. By you doing that, you're not waiving all of the other rights that you have pursuant to this contract. So this is kind of preserving your ability to still say, wait, we're still going by the contract. I just let you do that one thing. It didn't mean the whole contract was done. Assignment, the no assignment contract section is actually the part that's about not being able to sell off your spot, basically not being able to transfer the rights and responsibilities that the attendee has when she signed this contract to another person by herself, right? She has to talk to you first. And so I say here that her spot cannot be assigned or sold to anybody else other than the attendee without the advance express and written consent of you. So if she comes to you and says, look, Julia, I've got bad news. I've got something happening in the family. I can't go. But my friend who you also had like talked to about this retreat, she can actually make it. If you and that other girl get together and you talk and you want her to come to your retreat, and now you've gone ahead and given the written consent, then you can go ahead and have this person transfer their spot in the retreat to the new person. I would probably still recommend that the payment would go through you and you would just refund the original person because you would want the new person to sign a new contract and have the payment and all that kind of stuff. I just want, the only thing that you have to fill in here is I want you to go in and just put in the name and email address or means of contact that someone should contact if they needed this to happen. All right, number 12, force. So this is all about if something crazy happens, if there is a fire that burns down the place where you're going to have your retreat before it happens, if there's a hurricane, if there's a flood, if there's any kind of like civil or political disturbance, or war or something crazy happens in the area where you were going to take people, or even while you're there, you don't want to be responsible for that, obviously. So that is what paragraph number 12 addresses. Paragraph number 13 is all about just setting the record straight that you didn't offer any guarantee or warranty. Like if you come to this retreat, you'll be a millionaire by the time you're done, or you'll learn how to run your business. And when you get home, it'll be a 7-figure business, right? You never made any sort of warranty or guarantee. everyone's experience is different and everyone's going to take something different away from this experience. 14 is just about what state in the US, what state's law actually applies to this contract. So you would just go ahead and fill in the name of your state. This should be consistent with where your business is registered and where you live. So you would just go ahead and put that in, and then that state's laws would be the governing laws of this contract. It would be like the laws that control how we implement this contract. Section number 15, it's all about the entire agreement and the headings that are included. So entire agreement is important because what that says is, to the attendee, is that what they see here in writing on these few pages, it includes the entirety of your agreement and your understanding between one another. So maybe if they like heard you say something on the phone, if you offered a call to talk about your retreat, and they heard you say something on the phone, and then they're like, wait, that I remember on the phone she said this, but in the agreement it says this. The agreement is controlling. So if they have questions, and this is how I want you to explain it to them, if they have questions because they see something in the document in this contract that's inconsistent or at least inconsistent with their understanding of something that you told them, or maybe they saw on a social media post or like heard from a friend, I want them to ask you about it because this contract is the entire agreement. So it says right here, there were no promises or conditions in any other agreement, oral or written, between the parties anywhere else other than this document. It also just quickly mentions that the headings of this contract are just for convenience, and so people shouldn't like interpret them, or they shouldn't have any sort of like legal viability or enforceability issues. Number 16 is one that I included that I did not see included. I have not seen included in the contracts that I've signed when I've gone other places. So I wanted to make sure that this was included for you because I'm hoping that you're taking lots of beautiful photos and videos and sound recordings and whatever else, Instagram stories and everything while you're at your retreat to promo your event while you're there. Maybe to even create a little B-roll for the next time that you're going to offer a retreat or to attract new clients. So you want to make sure that the attendee knows that their photograph will be taken. You might be recording stuff. If there's anything that you know for sure, any like way that you're going to be recording this retreat or like any other forms of media that you're going to be taking that I haven't listed here, I would definitely spell it out. I included audio and video photograph, like the main ones that I knew about. And then I put that you're not taking pictures of them 24/7. It's not like there's surveillance. You're taking pictures regarding the attendees' participation in the retreat. And then here I put that it's for the purposes of promoting and marketing your retreat across social media, across advertisements, across companies, the company's website, and even to future attendees. For advertisements, if you plan to do like Facebook ads, you could even put in parentheses here, i.e. Facebook ads or something like that, just if that's something specifically that you know you're going to do. And then quickly, I just told them that they're not going to be receiving any compensation for the use of their images, but also for the use of a testimonial. Just make sure again that that's true. So if that is not true, delete that sentence. But in America, you actually can't pay people for their testimonials or offer some sort of discount unless you're going to then have them say that in their testimonial, or you're going to write it above the testimonial that you market and promote. Okay, so last but not least, I just put a quick attendee statement here that kind of wraps up a lot of what we've talked about, but also addresses the most important legal issue that they've now read and agreed to this contract and this release of liability, that they fully understand it. They're certifying that they're 18 years or older, because in America, only people 18 years or older can sign contracts. We don't have capacity when we're under 18 because we're not adults. And then that they're legally competent to sign the contract. They're also signing it voluntarily and willingly, and so they can't say later they were forced by duress or any other thing, and that they recognize that by signing below, completing this document, and by paying, that they are unconditionally releasing you from liability to the greatest extent that the law will allow, because the law won't always allow full release of liability, because sometimes we can't release for things like gross negligence, like when people do like really bad things, right? But you're never going to do that. I know that. So, okay, last but not least, this is really important because it's really important that we do this correctly. So stay with me here, stay awake, stay alive. So the very last thing that I need you to do is go in, and I want you to, you can erase this. I'm just kind of showing you here, like, that's where you could create a flat line, or if you're using a form, put in a signature box or something like that. That's where they should sign. The attendees should sign. This, though, is where you need to have their name printed, because you want to have a signed name and like signature and a printed name so that it's legible and so that you can read it. And then you need this to be the date that the person signed. And then for you, this is where you would sign. This would be your little fancy signature. But then here, your name would be printed. So if this were me signing this document, for example, if I was the one running the retreat, I would have Sam Vanderwielen, parentheses, on behalf of Sam Vanderwielen LLC. Okay. For my S Corp friends, even if you're an S Corp, remember to check with your accountant. You're probably an LLC. You are an LLC with S Corp filing status. So that's just a tax filing status, but you're still an LLC entity probably. I'm 99% sure. So just go ahead and check. I'm an S Corp, but I'm an LLC in terms of entity. So I would just put Sam Vanderwielen, parentheses, on behalf of Sam Vanderwielen LLC, close parentheses. I would date it. And then, yes, believe it or not, you actually do leave this little end of contract thing because it shows that there were no additional pages. Whew, we're all done. We built it out. Good job. So I know that this is not the most exciting or sexiest thing in the world, but this contract will get a little cleaner, get a little shorter once you've gone through and filled this out. As I talked about in the beginning, the most important thing to me is that this is true as to you and how you run your business. Remember, contracts cannot fix bad intentions or bad like implemented stuff. So it has to be the way that you actually do stuff. You can't use a contract to cover up for something that you do that's not actually true. So you want this to be true. You want it to be like related to you and actually how you run your business and your retreat. And you want to give it a good, clean read through, make sure that all of the stuff is filled out. And of course, if you have any questions at all, as you know, I can't give like personalized legal advice or be your attorney ever, but I can jump in and clarify plenty. So if you have questions about like, I don't really understand what I'm supposed to do here, feel free to shoot me an email anytime at sam@samvanderwielen.com. You can also just head to my website, samvanderwielen.com, and shoot me a message through the contact tab. And you should have gotten your email by now giving you an invite to my private client-only Facebook community, the Legally Legit community, so you can post a question there if you think it would be helpful to get feedback from me and help the other women in the group. Thank you so much for not only purchasing this retreat contract template. I am so proud of you for doing the right thing, legally protecting yourself and your amazing event. But I'm also just so appreciative to have you inside my community. I take my job very seriously because I really, really love what I do. And I just want you to know that I'm here for you. I'm here to support you. And I'm most certainly in your corner. So talk to you soon.
Copyright 2022 Sam Vanderwielen LLC. All rights reserved. Any use of this intellectual property owned by Sam Vanderwielen LLC may not be used in connection with the sale or distribution of any content, free or paid, written or verbal, product, and/or service by you without prior written consent from Sam Vanderwielen LLC.